This is the Conrad Dannenberg interview for June 23rd, 2006. Yes, hello. This is Anthony Young calling. I'm calling for Conrad Dannenberg, please.
Speaking.
Yes, Mr. Dannenberg. Martin Holman gave me your phone number, and I am working on a book on the history of development of the Saturn F1.
You are thinking you tried to get me already a few days ago.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I somehow lost your message.
I understand.
I'll call you back.
Okay.
I'm glad you finally called me back.
Well, I'm glad I'm able to reach you today. I made sure to contact Martin Holman first because I wasn't quite sure where I could reach you, and I told him of my book project. And he said, you have to talk with Conrad Dannenberg. So he emailed me your phone number. Of course, I am familiar with, in a general way, with your work with Dr. von Braun and the other team members on the Saturn V. But I have not been able to find detailed information on your work on the program, and I was hoping you could speak with me today.
You want to do it by telephone?
Yes. I'm actually calling from Texas.
Oh, I see.
Would you be able to speak today, or would you like me to call back?
Oh, this would be a pretty good time.
Okay, that's wonderful. The book I am working on actually will detail the development of the F1 engine and its integration with the S1C Saturn V first stage. And I do have an organization chart here of NASA headquarters and the Office of Manned Spaceflight, and it lists you as Deputy Director of the Saturn Systems Office.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the SITM program.
Yes. Mr. Dannenberg, were your first responsibilities when discussions of the Saturn V rocket were beginning? Were you always in Huntsville?
I was practically all the time in Huntsville, although I very often spent quite a bit of time in California. I was, before the SITM program, in charge of the engine procurement. You probably know that von Braun decided not to develop our own engines, but to buy all our engines from North American Aviation.
Yes.
Rocketdyne division at that time.
Yes.
We got the Redstone engine from there, later on the Jupiter engine, which really became the H1 for the Saturn 1 project.
Correct.
And even for the Saturn 5, practically all engines came from North America.
Okay. But it was such a large engine. What were the concerns of developing this engine for the Saturn V?
Of course, you said it yourself. It's by far, even today, still the largest engine. And that, of course, means there are a lot of huge components. And to develop them and to make them work reliably was really quite a challenge.
Yes.
By the way, have you ever been to Huntsville?
Yes, I have. I was there last year, and I went to...
Did you see our engine display? Right now we have an engine display, starting with the V2 engine, or A4 as we call it, and going all the way to the space shuttle main engines. And of course the F1 engine is one of the displays. And we also have a number of solid propellant engines on display.
Oh, I see. That I don't think that was completed when I was there last April.
I think it's not quite a year old.
Oh, I see. Okay. I will be returning there hopefully within the next 6 months, and I'll make sure to see that.
Yeah.
The Saturn V was really an evolution of the Nova rocket program, is that correct?
Well, it's the other way around. The Nova would have been a follow-on to the Saturn V.
Oh, I see.
The Nova would have been bigger. The Nova would have
Yes.
First stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been required to build the Nova if we would have made a direct lunar landing.
Yes, direct descent.
Gone through the lunar orbital rendezvous. Then, of course, we would have landed with three people in that case. And that just required a much bigger launch vehicle. And that would have been the Nova.
I see, I understand.
Some general plans were made for the Nova, but no detailed design was made.
I see, okay. The what were the activities of the Huntsville engineering group with regard to developing the F1 engine? For example, your involvement with that portion of the program.
Well, I was not too deeply involved at that time. I was already working on as a Saturn V deputy manager worrying about the entire Saturn project.
I see, yes.
The engines. Mm-hmm. You also may know that the initial contract for the F1 was led by the, at that time, the Lewis Center. Today, the John Glenn Center.
I see.
So they had the initial contract because at some time from Bound did really not show too much interest in it. You know, the initial idea of the F1 was to replace the 8 engines on the Saturn 1. There were some people in Washington who were of the opinion that we never would be able to operate, to ignite and burn 8 engines all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So some people in Washington, APA, the Advanced Research Projects Agency, insisted on working one big engine which would eventually be used for the Saturn 1 as a single engine.
Oh, I see.
But that replacement was never done. When Kennedy said, let's go to the moon, we needed 5 of the F1s for the first stage of the Saturn 5.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably know we launched quite a number of Saturn 1s. And even the Saturn 1B is basically still a Saturn 1 with a much bigger second stage.
Yes, and it was a very reliable rocket, too.
Right.
I've been studying the architecture, if you will, of the Saturn V first stage, and it's, of course, always has been on such a scale that did the size of the Saturn V really alarm your development team in terms of its sheer size and in terms of engineering the thrust structure for the engines?
Well, of course, people were quite a bit concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Even just handling these big things, producing them, building them, and then taking them from initially Huntsville, and later on, of course, from the Michoud assembly facility close to New Orleans.
Yes.
To the Cape. So even the transport, of course, created quite a number of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of people, I would even say, including myself, were quite a bit concerned that such a huge launch vehicle, which was by far the biggest at that time, that really everything would work all right.
Okay. There were also test facilities outside of Huntsville for the first stage, weren't there? Were there live stage tests done outside of Huntsville, or were they done elsewhere?
I don't really remember that they were done somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
The other stages, the upper stages, were tested, of course, in Mississippi at the Stennis facility.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Today, Stennis, it was not Stennis at that time. But I don't think the Saturn One first stage was tested outside. I'm not too sure, though.
Okay. Could you describe a bit your responsibilities in terms of the Saturn V program? Because I really don't have much detailed information on that. But could you tell me a bit about that?
Well, of interest to you may be that initially the Saturn V had only four F1 engines.
I've read that.
Yeah. The Houston people, at that time, I think it was still the Space Test Group. It was not the Johnson Center. They had promised that their lunar landing equipment would weigh below 100,000 pounds. And as you probably know from your studies, these things always increase in weight.
Yes.
They always become quite heavier than you initially think they would be. And when von Braun saw that the weight was getting close to 100,000 pounds, then he made a last-minute decision. I think the contract negotiations with Boeing, which was a set-on first-stage contractor, they were already going. And then, really, in the last minute, we added the fifth engine, because von Braun predicted that the lunar lander would weigh quite a bit more than 100,000 pounds. And it finally came out at about 125,000.
Yes.
It just took care of the fifth engine.
I've also read that actually it also helped, not just the additional thrust, but it also helped to alleviate concerns about the buildup of gases and turbulence in the center of those four engines that the fifth engine helped to alleviate. Is that correct?
That may be correct, although I'm not aware of it. I have not not heard that.
Okay. So you would say your responsibilities then as a deputy director there of that office was as a sort of program management role?
Correct.
Okay.
And in that office, we handled all the setups. So setup 5 was just one of our responsibilities.
Yes.
There was in setup 1, and at some time on paper, there was even the setup 2, setup 3, setup 4, and also setup 5. And when Kennedy said, let's go to the moon, and I think I have mentioned yet, you probably know that the setup program was started by the Army.
Yes, that's right.
The Army apparently also picked the name Sedan.
Or
von Braun really picked it, but he still was with the Army. And General Medeiros, John Bruce Medeiros, he really wanted to go with the Army to the moon and to establish on the moon an observation post to see what's going on down here on Earth. People had not thought at that time of spy satellites. Today, of course, we do that kind of thing with our spy satellites. And he wanted in their place to develop a lunar base, which eventually probably would have been an automated base. But of course, to establish it, to build it, you would need a relatively large launch vehicle. And von Braun, you probably know, he was always very careful. So he did not go from the Saturn 1 directly to a Saturn 5 or a lunar landing vehicle. He wanted to go step by step. And that's why we had on paper all these intermediate stages.
I see.
But
yeah.
When Kennedy said, let's go to the moon, it was decided to finally still take one big jump and to go from the Saturn 1 directly to the Saturn 5.
Okay. What was your personal response when you first heard President Kennedy's message about the decision to go to the moon? And were you in Huntsville? I assume you were in Huntsville.
I was in Huntsville at that time, right?
Yes. That was a very pivotal moment in history. What was your response to his decision?
Well, of course, we were all very happy. You may have heard that really in Peenemünde, starting in the early days, our goal was really always space flight. And even von Braun and I myself also, we were ready and willing to use the Army to pay for all these expensive developments. We both, von Braun and many others and myself, we had been working with amateur rocket groups. We had one amateur group similar.
Yes.
The VFR group in Hanover, where I grew up. We called it the GEFRA, Gesellschaft für Raketenforschung. And our goal was my goal, but we wanted to do space flight.
Yes, that's true. I think I've read work of the of course the that group before getting involvement with the development of the V-2, and I do have quite a bit of information on that. There is quite a bit of political intrigue, though, because a lot of people were unaware that the rather large rocket team consisted of hundreds of engineers as well as scientists, and that the larger of the two groups went to Russia, and the smaller group with von Braun, of course, came to America.
They von Braun got only permission initially to come over here with 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
But Tolstoy, who was our military boss, General Tolstoy, he finally got, permission to come over with 127. And some people could not make it right away, so the number which is normally quoted, which I normally quote, is 118.
Correct.
And 118 was the first initial group to come over. Some of them, most of them even, still in 45, right after the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one shipment in early 46.
I see.
And that made up the 118.
Okay.
Later on, additional people came over because the army, particularly Medeiros, could not hire enough American engineers, because private industry paid much more than the army did. So the people wanted to work for private industry and not for the army. So von Braun, and particularly also Ries, and you may have heard the name Steinhoff.
Yes.
Our guidance of control men. They brought quite a number of additional people over. So the total number of people who came over from Germany is more than 118. And I would guess it's about 350.
Oh, I see.
Some of them were not even in Peterbinder.
Mm-hmm.
But they were young engineers. Like you may have heard the name Harry Hooper.
Okay, I'll have...
Hermann Köller.
Mm-hmm.
Horst Tome. They were all very young engineers, and they were pretty hired from the high school to come over to this country. And these three, which I just mentioned, went back to Germany. And they were for many years until they retired the top space people in Germany.
I see.
Harry Hooper in Munich, Hermann Kölle in Berlin, and Horst Thome in Aachen.
I see. You mentioned just a moment ago that the lure to after the war to go to private industry, of course, from a financial end was very strong, and I spoke with Mr. Winterstein, who wrote a book about the rocket team after the war, and that he really lobbied, tried to persuade Dr. von Braun to keep the team together and pursue their rocket development work because of the team.
Yeah, I know his story.
Yeah. I think it's very significant that all these engineers who had opportunities to later to pursue other work decided to stay together and really only could hope to develop the large rockets that eventually happened.
Right. And of course some people left in spite of this desire to stay together, and quite a number of people did go into private industry.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, my argument has always been that if you, of course, always regarded Dr. von Braun as the leader of the group of all these scientists and engineers, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. It's my opinion that if the rocket team had not come to America, there would have been no space race. Would you agree with that? Meaning that if America had not had the benefit of all these German rocket engineers, rocket development in the United States would have taken many, many more years.
Well, I really have not thought about that question or that problem.
Oh, I see.
You may have a good point there.
Yes, okay. Can we Can you discuss a little bit again your the scope of your responsibilities for the Saturn V program? I want to make sure that I can properly describe some of your duties with regard to that program.
Of course, the main problem we had in the Saturn office was to eventually write the contracts with the contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And to have the upper stages built outside. You probably know they were not built here in Huntsville. We only basically built the first stage.
Yes.
On the other hand, particularly our quality control people had a pretty strong penetration of the contractors, and they spent quite a bit of time there to, in a way, pass our information on to the contractors who were, in many cases, at least in the rocket field, knew. They were basically airplane companies, and there are quite some differences between rockets and between the airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a pretty strong penetration, and you may have heard that some of the contractors really didn't like it too much.
Yes.
They would have been would have preferred to be left alone to work more under the Air Force principle. They write the contract and then they leave the contractor alone until he has to deliver the hardware. From Bowen always, in many cases we even had liaison offices. Before joining the Saturn program office,
mm-hmm.
I was liaison initially to North American to buy our engines there and to be sure that their engines meet our requirements, meet our needs. That was really my main responsibility. You may know that the Redstone engine, for example, was accepted in White Sands. And I was also in charge of acceptance testing of all the Redstone engines, which initially came here to Huntsville.
Mm-hmm.
We built the first 10 or so Redstones here in Huntsville, and then the production was turned over to Chrysler.
Ah.
And then, of course, the engines were delivered from North America to Chrysler.
Yes.
And those engines were basically tested in White Sands.
I see.
And there was a relatively big test stand. Some people call it a 5 million pound test stand. And in a way, the Redstone engine was a tiny engine on that huge test facility.
Yes. I see.
And so at that time, I spent quite a bit of time in White Sands to accept the engine, do the engine testing, to set up initially the test stand, the test facility, and of course, initially I had to be present at all the acceptance runs and to certify that mostly the engines met the specific impulse.
Ah, yes, okay.
Because the specific impulse was quite critical, and in fact I remember one case where the engine did not meet the specific impulse, and I did not accept it. And of course, we had a pretty big battle with Sam Hoffman, who was the division chief of North American,
mm-hmm.
the Orkazine division at that time. And they finally made another acceptance run, made a few minor changes, and the same engine eventually met the requirements.
I see. So the same engines that were fully tested and then certified became the flight units, is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
All right. And von Braun insisted that all the engines were being tested because all the engines had a somewhat different resistance of the cooling jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And if the resistance, the pressure loss in the cooling system was too great, then the engine might run out of oxygen and it might not have used all the fuel.
Yes.
And you probably know we used ethyl alcohol as a fuel.
Which fuel did you mention?
Ethyl alcohol.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
For the V2 as well as for the Redstone.
Okay.
And I don't know if you realize why von Braun decided to buy the Redstone engine from North America. Our chief engineer, Walter Riedel, had left the group. He was one of the ones who went to private industry.
Yes.
And he joined the aerospace division of North American Aviation.
Oh.
all the changes we would have liked to introduce into the V2. But when Arthur Uhrhoff started to produce a V2, we had a design freeze, and we were prohibited from making any more changes.
Oh, okay.
And so we could not introduce many of the good ideas we had. But Walter Riedel could now introduce these changes when he built for North American, initially the Navajo engine. So our Redstone engine was initially the Air Force Navajo engine.
Oh, okay.
You probably heard about the Navajo project.
Yes, it is. It's a very curious-looking missile, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it would have used two of the Redstone engines.
Mm-hmm.
There was even one Navajo project where it would have used three of the Redstone engines.
I see.
And so we could finally use these engines in order to power the Redstone vehicle.
Okay.
And the alcohol we use in the Redstone is 90%. For the V2, we use 75%.
Mm-hmm.
So it had much more water in it to dilute the alcohol. And that, of course, helped with the combustion temperature.
Yes.
So the Redstone burned a little bit hotter and had, therefore, a somewhat higher specific impulse.
Okay. The of course, the Saturn I preceded all this work, preceding the work on the Saturn V, but I assume with, because there were Saturn launches taking place as early as 1961.
All right.
With the decision by President Kennedy to go to the moon, I guess the Saturn V program really took off.
Correct. And of course, we were all very happy. We had finally a real meaningful task. We had also finally a task where we didn't have to work for the military anymore.
Of course.
So, it was in a way, an emergency solution in Peenemünde already and later on in this country. Without the military, I think the entire space game would not have gotten underway. I think even the V2 is such a big vehicle already that an amateur group just cannot accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only the facilities you need to build it and to do the static firing, but you eventually need a range. And I think most private companies, even relatively large companies, don't have the necessary property to be able to afford a firing range.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in Peenemünde, we launched into the Baltic Sea. And for that reason, here in this country, and my wife is now making some extra noise.
How long have you two been married?
About 16 years.
60 years, that's great. I've only been married 20 years, so... and I have two daughters. How many children do you have?
I have one son from my first wife.
I see, okay.
Yeah, this is my second marriage.
I see. Well, you have... when you first moved to Huntsville, you've always lived there, correct?
In this country.
Yes.
Well, we spent the first 5 years in Fort Bliss, of course.
Yes, of course. Okay.
But when we came here in 50, as I said earlier, I spent a lot of time in California.
Oh, yes.
Accepting the engines, developing the engines with North American.
Mm-hmm.
And when the F-1 really was taken over by Marshall, I was at that time in charge of the Chrysler contract to build the Chrysler Redstone missile.
Oh, yes.
Later on the Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
Chrysler also built the Jupiter, and for that reason, of course, they got the contract to build the first stage of the Saturn I.
Correct.
Because you probably know the Saturn I consists of Redstone and Jupiter tanks.
Right.
And basically the Jupiter engine.
And they were all built in Huntsville, correct?
Well, later on, of course, Chrysler built them in Detroit.
Oh, yes, yes, you're correct.
Mm-hmm. The Redstone and the Jupiter were built in Detroit, but the facility they had in Detroit was not tall enough for the Saturn I. So for the Saturn I, Chrysler went to Michoud, and Chrysler actually activated the Michoud plant to build the Saturn I, and later on, of course, also the Saturn I B first stage.
Okay. Since you were involved with the contract negotiations with Chrysler, maybe you can answer my question. A lot of people have been curious about the fact that an automotive company like Chrysler Corporation would get a contract to build a rocket, whereas Boeing is an aerospace company, and of course it made sense for them, and like North American, to build these spacecraft. What was your feeling about Chrysler Corporation building the Saturn I stage?
Well, Medina's had the idea to do the production by private industry.
Mm-hmm.
And he could not get any of the aerospace stuff like that. So he leave the Air Force and build missiles for the Army. So there was no one who was willing to bid on the Chrysler. And I think that's also true later on for the Jupiter contract. And so the defense secretary at that time, he was a former Chrysler director, and he ordered Chrysler to take on the production of the Redstone.
Mm-hmm.
So Chrysler was in a way pushed into the job.
Oh, I see. Okay. Of course, with the size of the Saturn V, it was a much, much larger program to manage, and you were involved in management aspects of the Saturn V program, correct?
Really only in the beginning.
Oh.
You probably know that later on Arthur Rudolph took over.
Yes, that's correct.
And about 2 years into the program, so it must have been about 63,
mm-hmm.
Arthur Rudolph, who had stayed with the Army when we all became NASA employees.
I see.
So he worked with the Army for the Pershing vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And after the Pershing development had been finished, he came back again to Marshall. And at that time, von Braun decided to replace my boss, Lange, Dr. Lange, Oswald Lange, and to turn the Saturn program over to Arthur Rudolph.
I see.
And I think it was a wise decision for Moen, because my boss, Oswald Lange, did not have any real experience in the building of huge systems.
Mm-hmm.
While Arthur Rudolph, as you know, I'm sure, he built the V2s in Germany, in the Mittelwerke.
Yes.
And of course, he had also experience here in this country building the Pershing.
Okay.
So he had a much better production experience.
Okay.
And I think Arthur Rudolph did really an outstanding job. And I personally agree with Winterstein, whom you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Without Arthur Rudolph, I think we would not have had such a successful program.
Yes. I'm glad Mr. Winterstein wrote that book, because Dr. Rudolph was a very, very capable engineer and a program manager. And
you may know he worked on rockets way before von Braun.
Oh, is that right?
He was a little bit older than von Braun.
Mm-hmm.
He worked initially with Maxwell here. Does the name mean something to you?
No, it does not.
Maxwell here was a little bit like von Braun. He was a very good engineer. He was a flyer in World War I, and he wanted to go to the moon and to Mars by putting rockets on aeroplanes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his idea. And he actually was the one who interested me in space. He came to my hometown and gave a presentation on a trip to Mars. And that was in 1928. And he convinced myself and some of my friends that in order to get to Mars and even to the moon before that, you need rockets. You cannot do it with airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we became interested in rockets.
I see.
And you probably understand the big difference between an airplane and a rocket. For an airplane, you have a long runway, and even with a relatively small engine, you can build up your takeoff velocity, particularly since you have on your airplane your big wings.
Yes, you have lift.
They help you to generate the lift to take off from your runway.
Mm-hmm.
For a rocket, you don't have that advantage. And your thrust of your rocket has to be bigger than the weight of your rocket.
Correct.
Not the case for an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And a rocket weighs at least twice as much because it also carries its own oxidizer.
Yes.
But an airplane, again, doesn't do. So there are some real big problems. And I must admit, when I was still in high school and after we had heard Maxwell here, I did not realize all these complications. And we thought it was a pretty straightforward development from airplanes to rockets that eventually go into deep space.
Mm-hmm.
And I am still today surprised that many of the things, starting with the V2, worked after all pretty well.
Yes.
And again, there is an area where von Braun really should get all the credit. He was always very careful. He always insisted that any rocket we launch had first a static firing. So in case you have any problem, you can define the problem, you can fix it, you make another acceptance run, and only then you go to the launch pad.
Mm-hmm.
If something happens during the launch, you might never be able to find out what was the real problem.
I see. So with, for example, the V2s, were they captive tests first to make sure the engine would perform smoothly before the actual launch?
Initially, all the vehicles were captive tested, and that was the purpose of test stand number 7.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you know about Peenemünde.
I've read quite a bit of it, but and I'm compiling a research material on that.
Yeah, we had a test stand number 1, which tested only the propulsion system.
Mm-hmm.
So the two tanks eventually and the rocket engine, and you probably know we used the turbo pump to build up the pressure for the rocket engine.
Yes.
So that was the purpose of test stand number 1. And then we had a number of other test stands which were basically composed of engines.
Yes.
Do you get the signal on the phone?
I just heard a little beep, yes. But I can hear you okay.
Okay.
Maybe somebody's trying to use the phone.
My wife just told me I pushed the wrong button. I apparently was a cause of the noise.
Okay. That's okay. I recently came across a website where you took a trip a couple of years ago, maybe just 2 years ago, back to Germany, and you actually had a chance to tour some of the old development sites there in Germany for the V2. Is that correct?
Yeah, before Peenemünde, you may have heard there was Kummersdorf.
Yes.
Where the army did the initial testing. And I had not seen Kummersdorf during the war for security reasons. Our responsibilities were really very limited. And I didn't get a chance to go to Kummersdorf, although some of the early V2 or A4 development was done there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised by the huge size of the rockets. Rocket test facilities which were in Kummersdorf.
Oh, okay.
And I don't even recall that I wrote something up and made a report about that.
Okay. When Dr. Rudolph took over the Saturn V program office, what work did you do then on the Apollo program?
Well, before Rudolph took over the program office, he had it what we called a Saturn Systems Office.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically headquarters office located in Huntsville, though. So he was initially a headquarters man, NASA headquarters man, located in Huntsville,
mm-hmm.
operating the Saturn System Office.
Mm-hmm.
And after Rudolph took over the Saturn launch vehicle itself, Saturn Systems did all the other ancillary things, like transportation, our interface with Debus at the Cape was basically done by the Saturn System.
Yes, Dr. Debus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Propellant supplies, the test facilities and all these things were done by the Saturn System office. And I, after Rudolph had taken over the actual launch vehicle, the Saturn V, I was running the Saturn System office for about a year or
Yes.
And I was working on space stations of said type, using the Saturn V, and we still were inclined to use nuclear power
mm-hmm.
or power supplies. And such a space station would be much more flexible and much more versatile than our present one.
Yes, I know.
Was later on it was decided not to use the Saturn V, but to use a space shuttle and to build with relatively small space shuttle components our present ISS.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's why it takes still some 42, 45 launches. We could have done it with 5 or 6 Saturn launches.
I know.
Would have had a space station already for a long time.
And quite a big one, too.
Yeah. And a much bigger, much more versatile one.
I'm surprised that so soon into the Apollo Saturn program you moved to the Space Station Development Program. I was unaware of that. That was this around like 1955 or 6? I mean 1965 or 6 that you went to the space station work?
I would say it was about that time.
Okay.
And initially I also was involved in the Skylab project.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in a way, of course, it's the beginning of a space station.
That's correct.
And as I said, there was another idea by von Braun to build a much bigger Skylab using the second stage. And that, of course, leads then automatically to the question, should we not really build a space station?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I was working on these projects at that time.
Okay. So, what I'd like is for you to do, what was the first Saturn V launch that you actually witnessed, that you got to see at the Cape?
I think, I'm pretty sure I saw the first Saturn V.
I think it was, launched. Yeah, the 500F, I believe.
Right.
It, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what was your response? It must have been very impressive.
Of course, I have been surprised many times before. I was surprised working as an amateur on relatively small orbits. I was surprised when I saw the A4, as we call it in Peenemünde,
mm-hmm.
later V2. That was for me already a huge launch vehicle. And then, of course, later on the Redstones and the Jupiters, which were quite a bit bigger than the A4. And of course, I had seen a number of Saturn I launches because initially I was the deputy manager for the Saturn I program.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I saw all those launches.
Yes.
And I was, of course, already surprised by that size. And as you indicated, of course, the Saturn V is still quite a step. I would almost say an order of magnitude bigger than the Saturn I.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Where did you get to observe the launch at the Space Center of the first Saturn V? Were you inside the launch control?
No, I was not in the launch control. I think in the area of the VAB.
Oh, yes.
We had observation posts.
Mm-hmm.
And also where the press was. I think I was pretty close to the press area.
I see. So I imagine that after the launch you were interviewed by the press, correct?
I don't really remember that. On the other hand, of course, we had plenty of interviews all the time.
Okay. Of course, I've only seen Saturn V launches on these videotapes or on the DVDs, but and you were interviewed for this DVD set for Spacecraft Films, I believe, on development. It was either the Saturn I set or the Saturn V set, where you got to speak briefly on development there.
Yeah, well, as I said, I had plenty of interviews. I don't really remember all of them in detail.
Okay. As with your responsibilities on the Saturn V, I've actually heard some I read an interview with Dr. Rudolph saying the biggest challenge of the Saturn V wasn't the engineering so much, it was the management of the program.
That's where Arthur Rudolph did a real good job.
Mm-hmm.
He put up a management office, and he had quite a number of people working in it. And that was admired by many people in private industry.
Yes.
So many people came here and looked at his management system for the set-on program. And I have to agree with him, that was one of the biggest challenges.
Mm-hmm. There were problems of managing so many people, each of which had to do their own job very well for the whole vehicle to operate as it was designed. I've always marveled that so many, these five engines operating at once were able to operate at that level of power so smoothly for, I don't know how many minutes of powered flight the first stage was.
Over 2 minutes.
Yes.
So quite some time.
Yes. So would you say your involvement with the...